Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
It's good to be together this morning. I invite you now to stand or twist and greet your neighbor.
Universalist church service in this building in 1996. I was not accustomed to worshiping indoors, and I had absolutely no idea what to expect. Back then, we were still doing sharing, which was a period of time when a much smaller congregation would get up as they felt moved and say what was on their minds. I was not ready for that. And as I was sitting there, I listened to Tom Jankowski read a poem that he had written about fractals. I heard Will Lauder talking about what was going on in South America. Corinne Cook got up and complained about something. And then Bill Deamer stood up and said, "All I hear about these days is global warming and it's damn cold and I want to know what's going on." I was a bit shocked by that. But then Eldridge Morse stood up and said, "Well, Bill," and I thought, "Is that Dr. Morris?" And it was, and he told us what was going on. And I thought, wow, I am in the right place. These people care, and they're educated, and I have so much to learn. Yesterday, I had the privilege and the honor to go to the Climate Justice Summit with several members of this congregation in Walnut Creek at the UU Mount Diablo Church. And I found out just how much more I need to learn. It was an amazing day with amazing speakers. We talked a lot about efforts at both the individual and the community level. Certainly, we all know that there are a lot of things we can't do by ourselves and need to do in a group. But we also have to remember that there are things that we can do by ourselves and don't necessarily need to do in a group. They gave us four levels of action. Level one was individual action. Level two was friends and family. Level three was small groups in the community, city council, also faith communities, so you are there. And then the fourth, of course, was larger government action. Most of us are not going to go home and draft legislation. We don't feel qualified or capable of solving the huge problems. But we can come together and solve the smaller problems. And yesterday we talked a lot about listening and how to elevate the voices of those most impacted by environmental injustice so that they are heard over the voices of people who want to solve the problems that they don't necessarily have. We talked about systemic change, and we talked about the difference between climate justice and environmental justice, which was very important to me personally, because when I agreed to teach with Robin the environmental justice class that is scheduled for early November, I was coming to it from a perspective of feeling like a warrior for the planet, but never having approached that in terms of other people. And I wasn't sure how to mesh fighting for the earth with advocating for the people who live on the earth. The 2018 UU Common Read was a book of 12 essays by Unitarian Universalists, specifically about combining our seventh principle with our second. And that is mostly what I heard about yesterday. We talked about climate justice as being planet-centered and environmental justice as being people-centered and the intersections between those. One of the most moving speakers that I heard yesterday talked about the fact that people, someone's done some kind of study somewhere and decided that people need to hear something 7 times before they really pay attention and it soaks in. And that Earth Day is not enough. That the Palo Alto Church started having Climate Justice Month, which started on World Water Day and ended on Earth Day and involved 4 weeks of different specific activities that people could do alone and together to further climate justice. I found that very moving. I would love to think that we can organize something like that here in the future. We all know that getting people together in community and making decisions in common and being in agreement can be difficult, but sometimes when the sky needs to be raised, people need to come together and do it. Money is not always enough to solve problems, and sometimes when even donations aren't going to do it, all we have left is advocacy. And it's difficult to feel as though one voice will make any difference. I heard the phrase entrenched cynicism yesterday from someone who was talking about how hard it can be to feel as though any of us can do anything. But we have to try. We have to try. So I have 2 invitations for you today. One of them is to join me and Robin Daddle in November to discuss environmental justice from a UU perspective and talk about what we can do to further that movement. The other is to join me in singing my very favorite UU hymn. This was written by Joyce Poley. It's called Keepers of the Earth. And while she did not win a prize in the Silman competition, she was actually given honorable mention. She did win the People's Choice, which made me feel she'd been robbed. So the people chose Joyce, even though the committee didn't. I will help Luann and those of you who know it sing through the first verse, and then we'll keep going with other parts of the earth. Thanks.
It's good to join you all in worship today. There's lots of old friends in the house, so I feel right at home. I want to especially acknowledge Paul and Marita Wilson, who, when I was 31 and starting my ministry in San Jose with a 1-year-old and 9-month-old in tow, were kind of substitute grandparents, with my parents being far away, taught my kid how to change the remote on the TV, which is something you remember for life, you know. But it's good to be back here in this valley of expansive sky and fertile fields, migrating birds, the bats pouring out from under the causeway at dusk, the university helping us all to research big questions and bring forward a new generation of leadership. All of it, the bats, the students, it's all helping to push up the sky. During the decade that I served up here as executive director of what was then called the UU Legislative Ministry of California and now called the UU Justice Ministry of California, members of your congregation, including Eldridge and Judy Moores and Thomas Harder and Pat Pickett with healthcare, all sorts of people that I'm probably forgetting, really made important contributions to helping us secure the human right to water, access to health care, and a significant role in helping to assure that all of us, including same-sex couples, have the right to get married legally. Together with UU congregations from across the state and in collaboration with secular and other faith partners, you all helped make meaningful change. And Ramon and Karen, who are sitting over there, also had their hand in mixing up the leadership broth for this whole effort. I want to share a reading from Peter Rabel. The first time I went to General Assembly as a young minister in training, I went to the Service of the Living Tradition, which is a big service where they recognize new ministers coming in, as well as those who are retiring and those who have passed away. And Peter Rabel was the preacher that day. And he wrote, based on a scripture in Deuteronomy, which he just adapted slightly for his own use, "We build on foundations we did not lay. We warm ourselves by fires we did not light. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant. We drink from wells we did not dig. We profit from persons we did not know. This is as it should be. Together we are more than any one person could be. Together we can build across generations. Together we can renew our hope and faith in the life that is yet to unfold. Together we can heed the call to a ministry of care and justice. We are ever bound in community. May it always be so." I learned a lot from that reading, and it has stayed with me over the years, about the way that the impact of what you do, you don't always recognize in the immediate moment, but it passes down through generations. But now I have another understanding of how things get passed down through generations as well, the ways that we inherit not only the newly planted tree, but also the scourge of racism, the ways that we inherit a misunderstanding and obliteration of real history, and the ways that we pass forward things that we either intentionally are ignoring or things that we just are too oblivious to even know yet. A generation by generation passing forward is a complex and many-layered thing. October is a challenging month in California, and early November as well. When it's dry, there are a lot of fires. More recently, we've had some blackouts trying to prevent fires. We also had the 30th anniversary of the major earthquake. And October was challenging for me personally as well. October 15th in 1995, I was serving in the congregation in San Jose, and we had the privilege of ordaining Patricia Jimenez to a community ministry. And I'd like to share with you some words that I used in the call to worship that night. "There are times in life when the deeper questions knock at the door of the soul and refuse to go away until you open to them. There are times in life when a seemingly innocuous bush bursts into flame, interrupting one's stable life with a summons to leadership." When I wrote this, I didn't think I would have to take it quite so literally, but the very next day, in the evening, the church caught on fire due to a construction accident. The fire spread up the roof where all the new tar paper was. People that were in the building, there was no fire system. The building was built in 1892. Were warned by someone outside the building who went out for a smoke, came and got everybody to get out of there. And it propelled the congregation out not only that evening, but for 6 long years of renovation and endless amounts of fundraising. We eventually got back in. That fire taught me a lot. It taught me a lot not only about what it means to respond in an emergency, but the persistence that it takes to see something through, all the way through the unknown ups and downs of what we are called to do. And today, there's a different kind of fire. Youths and scientists and marginalized communities across the globe are calling us to wake up, to double down, and to move faster in response to the climate crisis. As Bill McKibben writes, "Climate change is a timed test, and the 2020s will be our exam. This is not a test of individual purity, and it's definitely not a test that we can pass alone." When I think about responding to something unexpected and urgent, I always go back to the story of Moses' call. I find it instructive. There he is, out herding his father-in-law's sheep and minding his own business. He's startled by a burning bush, which, while burning, was not consumed. Moses! Moses! Rather than running from this strange call as fast as he can, he answers, "Here I am." And at that point, he's given a task which seems overwhelming. In good Jewish tradition, he argues with God. He has not contacted the volunteer hotline to sign up for this. He's already working nights with the sheep. Besides, he doesn't have the skills for the task. He's neither an eloquent speaker nor a seasoned leader. Please, 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 just call on somebody else. Surely the Heavenly Nominating Committee could call on someone better suited to serve and succeed at this pivotal moment in history. But the power that is calling is insistent. And Moses receives a quick leadership training class. Throw your staff on the ground. So he does. And it becomes a snake. Moses is scared. But when you think about it, your ordinary tools are much more powerful than you think. Take the snake by the tail. He does. It becomes a rod again. When you can grab a hold of what you fear, it will not chase you. It can even be put to good use. Put your hand to your heart. It becomes white with leprosy. Take this ill and diseased hand and put it back on your heart. It's healed. To lead, you must pull close to you even that part of you which is diseased and less than perfect. An open and accepting heart has the ability to heal. You fear that you're not eloquent, that you won't be able to find the right words to touch others. Trust that a power greater than yourself will flow through you and link your work with the talents of others. Your brother can speak with eloquence. Go and work with Aaron. You do not need to do this job alone. When life is going along somewhat normally, it's easy to live under the illusion that it always will. The normal struggles and anxieties, the normal challenges of balancing the various life roles in one's life, the normal self-doubts and pleasure in growing competencies, the normal ethical struggles, normal, 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 normal. And then all of a sudden, it can change. The fire, an earthquake, the unexpected loss of a job, a death in the family, a divorce, a serious illness, an accident, a crazy administration in Washington, the outbreak of war. The whole world is tossed into the air. It feels scary, and much of what used to seem so important seems trivial. It seems unreal that other folks are continuing with their normal lives when the foundation of your life has been shaken. Short-term crisis brings people together and opens gates of affection. When you had nothing to do with causing the crisis, it's even easier for people to step forward and help. But as I look at the drought and the fires, the rising sea levels, the floods, the typhoons and hurricanes, and ponder the unthinkable of heading toward a 4 degrees Celsius rise in temperature for our planet, as we face this more complex crisis of climate disruption while embedded in the racism upon which our economy was founded, we face a slowly arriving crisis, one that is harder to notice in the calm periods and one in which we are also engaged in creating. What a strange, strange thing, and overwhelming as well, to find ourselves at this watershed moment in the history of the planet, when the lives of generations to come depend in large measure on what happens during this relatively brief window of time. If you are wanting your life to make a difference not only in the short term, but in geologic time. This inflection point in history is quite a moment to be alive. It's a call. I have to say, now 30-some-odd years into ministry and looking forward to retirement, this wasn't on my to-do list. Sometimes a call feels like an invitation. Other times it feels like a burden, an imposition, an inconvenience. But when in October of 2018, when the International Panel on Climate Change, the global body of leading climate scientists, issued a new report, what caught my attention most was the deadline. It was so much shorter than I was allowing myself to absorb. They said the Earth had warmed 1.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, and if we hope to keep it to no more than 1.5 to avoid catastrophic climate impacts, we only had till 2030 to reduce emissions by 45%. And by 2050, a mere two decades later, to be fully carbon neutral. By 2030? It's only 11 years from now. I'm always helped by deadlines. It does make it more concrete. When I count out the years, 2019, 2020, 2021, all the way through 2030, I try and imagine how old I'm going to be and how old my loved ones will be. And I need to think about, what do I need to stop doing in order to prioritize doing this work? How much time am I going to take off to work in this pivotal election? I remember someone saying to me once, it's great to change light bulbs. It's even better to change senators. Now is the time to go all in, to address foundational issues. There are massive public and private resources that will be mobilized. The question is where and in whose interest will those investments be made? I'm now teaching at Starking School for the Ministry, and one of the things I'm working on is to try and figure out how to better prepare our students to serve in a time of climate disruption. Theology, pastoral care, intergenerational dynamics. But one of the classes that we teach is a class called Ministry in Times of Disaster. Usually when ministers show up in times of disaster, it tends to be in the moment of impact, when people are most fragile and people are most expecting clergy to help. But a disaster, as I learned very concretely in my own experience with the church burning down, takes a very, very long time. And there's a period of time when you're out of the news and no one's really noticing, where you just have to keep on working. And it can get very lonely and very hard. So the other part that we teach here is about what that rebuilding looks like. And one of the things that is important is who your partners are when you're rebuilding. I take the students on a field trip to Santa Rosa because after the Tubbs fire, thanks to all of the amazing partnerships that were already available there in Sonoma County, where the immigration folks were working with the Labor Council, who were working with people working on affordable housing and on transit, and also the folks who are working on green space and the Green Belt Alliance work. There were existing relationships, not all super strong, but strong enough that in the disrupted space, you talk about a disaster or a crisis is both a danger and an opportunity. There is a disrupted space into which values will pour. The values may be driven by crisis capitalism, or they may be driven by a different dynamic. And in Santa Rosa, they have what's called the Alliance for a Just Recovery. They are inserting their values into that space as they rebuild. And what I learned was amazing. Not only did they have that capacity to begin to do that work, but it turned out that the people from Hurricane Sandy were advising them based on what they had learned and the green jobs that were formed in the rebuild there. And it turned out that the folks at Hurricane Sandy were being advised by the learnings out of the crisis at Katrina in New Orleans. And it turned out that the folks at Katrina were being advised and helped by those in New York who were rebuilding after 9/11 and watching what wasn't in place to represent the community interest. These are important times. And as you work in your environmental and climate justice work, one of the most important things you can do is to build relationships beyond the congregation with organizations and communities that help you find an intersectional approach to addressing these issues. In addition to building relationships in institutional settings, I also know there is the matter of making personal choices. I like to think of personal choices not so much as my little pole pushing up the sky is going to make all the difference, but it helps link me to others that are doing the same. And it becomes, in essence, a religious practice for me. I've been realizing that I need to shift my understanding of the climate crisis and the imperative to create climate justice from a cause among causes to an existential demand that is woven into all aspects of my life and ministry. So I have stopped flying, and I've become a long-distance train rider when I need to go somewhere far away. But even with that, my life is far from carbon neutral. What steps are we able to take to become more consistent part of the solution and less a part of the problem? I'm so excited that the town I live in San Jose, not really a town, it's a big city, has decided that they are no longer going to allow construction that includes fossil fuels. That's a huge deal. What are the ways that this deadline is pushing us to think of things and to do things, to step up at a pace and a level that we had not yet considered before? In an era of profound change in so many aspects of our lives, we do need to think generationally. And I remember when I was working and living up here in the Valley, going to this conference that had a panel of women farmers, many of whom were from the Capay Valley and out this way near you all. And one of the things that really struck my attention, or caught my attention, was the difference between the women who had inherited their farms and the women who were starting with rocky, not very good soil, like right from the start. And the woman that was starting out said, "Farming is a generational activity. Generation after generation, we build on what came before. We add another outbuilding. We improve the soil. It doesn't happen in a moment. A good farm does build soil over generations, but it also knows the urgency of the harvest. Justice requires the long view and powerful work in the right moment. Change happens sometimes so slowly we can't see it. So we foster friendships beyond the familiar. We organize for the long haul. We invest ourselves in the daily tasks of change, building networks of trust. And then when the public assumptions start to crack open, stunned by reality into the necessity for immediate change, we are ready to move history, ready with ideas and networks and relationships and songs and strategy and courage and compassion. A good farm has soil built up over these generations, yet knows this urgency. And this moment, justice too requires the long view and the powerful work in the right moment. Thank you all for doing your part to bring in the harvest, build the soil, and tend the field." Amen. Do we have any prayers from the people today? Okay. Let me find that. Let's take a moment to breathe. As there are prayers unspoken in our hearts. O love upon love, thou beyond all naming, we ask that you open our hearts to your presence. Be with us in times of joy, in times of grief, in times when we do not know how to answer the call, that we may grow in our capacity for compassion, resistance, and courage. Let us hold the prayers of all of the people as we follow the bell sound into the silence. Source of being, present before time and thought, our spirits do long to be made whole. Help us to clear new places at the table of our lives, where the settings are crowded by our years of carefully constructed assumptions. Help us to make room to answer your inconvenient calling, that we may act and answer and be together in community. Guided always by love. Amen. We have extinguished our flame, but not the fire of commitment, or the energy of service, or the love of community. These live in our hearts as we go forward into our week. Let's rise and join in our closing song, "The Tide is Rising." There are many verses. Get ready. Please join hands, if you would, for our benediction. When the calling comes, may we not be too afraid or faint-hearted to answer. Please repeat after me. May faith in the spirit of life. Hope for the community of earth. And love of the sacred in one another. Be ours now and in all the days to come.
Be ours now.